There were even more types of cottages than I had realized, and I absolutely thrilled at the picture set out before me and only wished that I had been an artist, so that perhaps, after returning to my body, I could have reproduced some semblance of what I now saw in such detail. The Garden City occupied an undulating valley, and on all sides the ground gradually sloped upwards until it reached a row of hills, plainly visible in the distance. I gazed my fill at the beautiful gardens, which could only exist in a world where there were no limitations of labor or wealth. There was much to be said for the cultivation of imagination in our physical plane existence, for although daydreaming did not produce any practical results whilst we were alive, yet our faculty of being able to imagine in detail most certainly came into its own in the astral world. Here one only had to be able to visualize a thing and think strongly about it for the thought to become at once an established fact, a fact which remained just as long as, through thought, one wished the idea to continue. Happy people indeed, and the thought passed through my mind that, now I knew a little more of what might be in store for me, I would not fret if I were told that soon it would be my turn to leave the physical world. What I had seen and knew, made me realize that it is always possible for people who have left the world to be happy, if they really desire happiness. My last thought before an unforeseen interruption occurred was, how easy it was to form a picture in one's mind of almost every occupant of the bungalows. In the physical world it would be wrong to judge a man from his garden, for probably he has had little or nothing to do with its creation. Here no gardeners are necessary, each garden was the creation of the owner, and from it one could make a very good guess as to the outstanding characteristics of the individual. I wished I might have the opportunity of putting my theory to the test. Just then my attention was drawn to a figure in white, running towards me along the rustic path, a figure that was shouting as she ran. It was Daphne, of course, and she was obviously very excited. "You've got here, Henry, I'm so glad. I've been trying to help you so much during the past few hours, and I thought my efforts had been useless. Some time ago I felt once that you were near me, and I was almost sure that you had managed to get through the veil. But the impression gradually faded and I had given up hope, when once more I felt that you were in the vicinity. I had to come to this spot, I don't know why, and when I saw you standing here, in a reverie but really here, I think my heart stopped beating for a moment for sheer joy. I looked at the graceful figure before me. She seemed just a slip of a girl, dressed in a muslin frock that showed off her girlish figure in the most enchanting lines, and I marveled at her beauty. Her dark brown hair with golden tints running through it made a perfect frame from the animated expression on her beautiful face, the eyes of which showed a love so pure that few men see it in the world. Everything that was decent in me seemed to come to the surface, and I felt the age-old desire to protect, to hold and to keep, which is the true feeling of a man for his chosen mate. I had no desire to speak, but gently though firmly took in my arms and reverently pressed my kisses on her face and hair. There was no passion in my embrace. There seemed no room for passion, but there was a deep-seated desire to come into closer touch with this child of my dreams, a desire to know her better and if possible to add to the happiness that she already had. She returned my kisses, not at all surprised at what I had done. For a moment her eyes filled with tears, which at once I tried to kiss away, almost before they had appeared. Then she hid her face as we turned, and with my arm around her waist, slowly strolled in the direction of her cottage. When we got there I led her into the lounge and up to the piano. "Play to me, darling," I said, "I feel the need for music just at the moment." I pulled up a chair and seated myself beside her. She played, what I cannot remember, but I know it was something that depicted joy. I leaned back, closed my eyes in sheer ecstasy, and for a few moments realized the peace that passed understanding, which, once felt, makes any other sensation empty and imperfect. I don't know how long we talked, but I remember I told her all about my misery after Charles was killed and how Achaia came to me, also my experiences up to the evening before, when with his help I met her again. We decided that although we were divided by the two of us living at different levels of consciousness, which made an ordinary life together impossible, we would create a life together, with things as they were, and prove that death was in no sense a barrier either to progress or happiness. We both felt sure that our regard for each other must enable me to pierce the veil whenever necessary and that I would come to her, even though she could not come to home. She told me something of the people who lived in the valley. Many of them were friends of hers, whom she wanted me to meet. She explained that people at this level linked up together, where their interests were similar, but that there was no marriage in the ordinary sense of the word. People there were known by names, but they were Christian names or nicknames, never surnames. She gave me instances of some of them, mentioning that one girl who was always smiling and happy was known as Sunbeam. Another who always dressed in blue was called Bluebell, whilst a man who made his life there one long effort at helping other people was known as the Doctor. I said I would look forward to meeting these friends of hers, but how would they take to me, to one who could not belong in the ordinary sense of the word? You will see, she said, at this level you only see the nice side PF people. For there are few petty jealousies such as we have in the world. Everyone can have whatever the other person has, if he or she wants it, merely by making a thought form to that effect, so any striving to live up to the standards of others is unnecessary. People here become themselves and you will soon realize, when you know them as they really are, that the old saying there is so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us is proved to be very true. I hadn't the slightest idea how long all this conversation had taken, but I remember I began to feel a stirring within me, which told me quite plainly that my body had had its quota of sleep. I had just time to bid Daphne goodbye when, without further warning, the walls of the room in which we were sitting seemed to melt into a mist which instantly evaporated, and again I felt that sensation of moving through space. At once I was awake in my body in Colombo. There was no halfway break on this occasion. I didn't find myself in my bedroom with my body lying on the bed in front of me. I was wide awake and looking at my watch. I saw that it was 7 o'clock and the sun was shining into my room. At once I got out of bed, almost rushed to my desk to start my report of the night's happenings, and now I have finished. It is 10 a.m. and I have just time to shave, bathe and have some breakfast before I may expect Acharya. I wonder what his reaction will be to all I have to show him. Will he be pleased at the progress his pupil has made, or will he tell me that this is just a flash in the pan, that it is unlikely I shall be able to travel alone in the future, and that much more hard work and study are necessary before I can wander without guidance? I shall know very soon. The picture of Daphne is still very real. Perhaps I missed my happiness by not marrying her in England when I had the chance. I don't know, but I have no regrets. I feel that perhaps there is a future before us which is infinitely more fascinating and beautiful than anything that could have been our lot in the world. Chapter 8. It must have been about 11 o'clock, and for the last 10 minutes I had been sitting at my desk reading over the notes I had made of last night's happenings, when suddenly the pleasant voice that I know so well broke into my reverie. "Well, Henry, my friend, so you have accomplished something worthwhile at last. Now perhaps you will admit that you have been able to prove for yourself those things which I told you in my early talks were facts to me." It was Acharya who had entered my room in his usual unobtrusive manner. "Yes, Acharya, I am bound to admit that I am beginning to realize that even the things you have told me about in past talks and which I have not yet been able to prove conclusively are undoubtedly provable with more experience. I suppose you are well aware of what happened last night and it is not necessary for me to hand you my report, but I would like you to read it, so that you may check up and see if I have forgotten anything of importance." Acharya replied that he was only too willing to read my report, and that he wished also to see the record of the second astral journey, which we took together. He added he would talk about them for a little while, before passing on to more tuition. After finishing these records, his face showed his appreciation of my efforts. He was obviously extremely pleased that I had been able to put into actual practice some of the tuition he had so patiently given me during the past week or two. I told him how much I was in his debt for his unselfish and much-needed help, but he assured me that I need not feel in any way indebted to him, for cases like mine were his particular job in life, and that he was well rewarded if those he taught benefited from that teaching in a real and practical way. He then started to comment on the past two nights, and I listened most attentively. This is what he said: "I must first explain why I took you to the third sphere of the astral world via London. As you know, this was quite unnecessary. My reason for it was to make you realize that any town in the world which you might go to in your astral body looks the same as the physical town you are familiar with, though what you see is not physical, but the astral counterpart of the physical places as they exist on the first sphere of the astral world. In future, it will be better to start your journeying from Colombo. You will find it just as easy to get up to spheres higher than the third, which is where you made contact with Daphne, as the same machinery operates. But to do that, it is necessary to have a particular place on each sphere, which you visualize in thought and to which your astral body will be transported in the course of a few seconds of time as you know it here. I expected that you might possibly become a little afraid when your surroundings became blurred and you felt a sense of movement. I must congratulate you on not having experienced an initial failure, which I have noticed sometimes happens to my pupils. They become frightened, and almost simultaneously awaken in their physical bodies with beating hearts produced by their fear. Actually, you have experienced this, for last night you returned to your physical body for a time without having any intention of doing so, when your excitement got the better of you whilst making your attempt to reach Daphne without any assistance from me. It is unnecessary for me to say anything much concerning the second sphere of the astral world, for it is very like the first, only less crowded and less noisy. In the two spheres nearest to the physical world, the permanent inhabitants live more or less the type of life that has always appealed to them in the physical world. In most cases, such people do not remain there for the whole of their astral existence. There are exceptions who are so attached to the material existence that they have no desire to progress to the higher spheres of the astral world, but they are forced to do so after a period that might run into 200 or even 300 years, at which time the ego urges the vehicle he is occupying to pass through the second death to the mental world. This method of progress is not the usual one, and it would not be yours when the time comes for you to pass into the astral world. You have already realized from seeing the activities of but a few people would live on the third sphere, that the life there would appeal to you considerably more than a round of visits to restaurants, theaters, or cinemas. I was able to show you both artists and musicians at work in the third sphere, but you must realize that this sphere is not limited to artists or musicians, and it would have been quite easy for me to show you great engineers, craftsmen devoted to some particular trade, in fact every type of individual whose consuming interest in life is not bound up with purely material amusements or pursuits. When you were listening to the music played by the group under Johann Strauss, you saw a few members of that parallel evolution called the Deva Kingdom. When you have had experience of spheres higher than the third, you will find that not only are they much more numerous there, but that they cooperate more and more with members of the human evolution the further we get away from the material life. You may think that their existence is preferable to ours, that you would prefer to evolve from fish, butterflies and birds into the stage of elemental, nature spirits, and eventually to a stage of Deva such as you saw comprised the orchestra that performed in the wood. We cannot change our evolution, except in very exceptional circumstances. You probably wondered why I spent so much time at the academy showing you the work that goes on in buildings of this kind. I did so for two reasons. The first reason was that you should realize that this was but one of the many schools which exist in the astral world, where people can get tuition in the particular art in which they are interested, in which enables them to be born in their next life with a desire to continue to study along these lines, so that a few of them at least can become great masters of their art and help the physical world to progress in both culture and learning. My second reason you must have guessed for yourself. Through your having a clear picture of that academy in your mind after you had returned to your physical body in Colombo, you were able to get back to that spot quite easily and without any stupendous effort. From there you were able to contact Daphne and continue your astral plane experiences. Do not forget this for the future. Pinpoint a certain building or view in your mind and you can then use that pinpointed picture as a thought form on which concentrate, when you desire to go to that particular sphere of consciousness. I hope that you have realized very pertinently the necessity of knowing the way in which time affects your sojourn at the astral level. I went into detail over this important point, so that you should understand how to investigate, should the occasion arise. Our journey to the part of the astral world where the ceremony was being held requires no comment. You will remember that after we arrived there and seated ourselves on the roots of one of the trees at the edge of the open space, I warned you to be as quiet as possible. The reason was that although the members of the Deva Kingdom do not really object to any human seeing them at their work, they do not like interruptions of any sort. You will have noticed the intensity of purpose that prevailed throughout the whole ceremony. The little men or gnomes, who came out of the forest in the early stages and started the proceedings with their chanting and beating of drums, are on a much lower level of evolution than both you and the members of the orchestra. One thing though must have been apparent, that all of them seemed to be concentrating with their whole strength on the work in hand. There was no levity or chatter such as one is used to at a concert in the world, immediately prior to the performance. It is this remarkable difference that I wish to impress upon you, for if you are to understand the members of the Deva evolution and, I trust, in due time work in conjunction with them, you must realize that life is a very serious business to them and levity does not usually enter into the proceedings. Not that they are unable to laugh, they are indeed extremely happy people who seem to enjoy the simple pleasures of nature, but they do not allow outside influences in any way to disturb the perfection of the work to which they set their hands. In order that you may understand what follows, I must digress for a few moments. You have probably heard of initiates, masters and adepts in our evolution. These terms occur in occult books, but little has been written about them. Briefly, I can tell you this much for the moment. As man evolves along the road that is set before him, he is actually under the control and guidance of a group of adepts, who are perfected man, but who were as you are, countless thousands of years ago. These men have finished the course of lives to be lived at the physical level, for they have learned all the lessons that the physical world has to teach. Because of their developed love for humanity as a whole, they have elected to remain at some sacrifice to themselves, as you may understand later on in connection with this planet, to help it on and to assist in its development. These adepts are sometimes referred to as masters, because some of them take pupils, men living in the world and not yet perfect in any sense of the word, to help them with the work that has to be done. These pupils are given many opportunities of development, which are not open to mankind in general, but you may be sure that they have earned these opportunities and it is not in any way a question of favoritism that they have been picked out from the bulk of humanity for this special work. It is hard work and usually means that such men have to give up many of the things they would do in the world, in order to devote themselves exclusively to learning how they can help humanity, without receiving any material benefit in return for that work. It is selfless service that they offer, and their only reward is that they are allowed to contact personally, in sleep when using their astral bodies, these perfected men whom they have agreed to serve. Such pupils, after many lives of work and special training, are prepared for the initiation ceremonies. These ceremonies give them powers that make them different from the ordinary run of human beings. They teach a man how to read other men's minds, for by the time that such a man has developed to this state, he will never use that power for anything other than to help a fellow human being. He is taught how to have continuity of consciousness at all levels, as I am teaching you to have continuity of consciousness at the astral and physical levels only, That is something which is difficult for you to understand as yet. Such men can, if necessary, work what the world calls miracles, but this is never done, except on the instructions of one of the adepts who help to govern the planet. There are 5 stages of initiation, and only when the 5th is reached is a man perfect and free from the necessity of being born again into the physical world. Sometimes the lives of initiates are extended, so that a man lives long beyond the normal span, but this is only done for special purposes or because that man is needed in a particular country in the world, to wield, equals exercise, exert, an influence which may make a difference to future generations. During the Deva ceremony at which you were present, you noticed that the young girl who took the solo part in the symphony remained at the top of one of the tall trees on the edge of the glade and did not at any time approach the members of the orchestra or come down to the ground. There is a reason for this. These girls are trained especially for the work they do. They live apart from the main body of the Deva people and are in fact dedicated to their particular work. For this they have to develop extremely sensitive bodies and minds that can attune themselves to the particular object which is being carried out. This girl, for instance, is a highly evolved being. She is an initiate in her evolution and so has knowledge and powers far greater than the average type of Deva, whom you will meet from time to time. Then there was the priest who completed the ceremony and invoked the beings who control the universe to help the work that was being done. He too was a highly evolved being, but nothing near an initiate and probably not even a pupil of one of the perfected men. His calling was that of a priest, who has been taught to gather up the force that has been generated by the concentrated music and the concentrated thoughts of those present and to transmit it through the power of thought to the meeting being held in the physical world. You may perhaps not believe that such things are possible and there is no necessity for you to do so, but to say such things cannot be is just as foolish as believing only because someone else has assured you that such and such a thing is true. I welcome the opportunity Daphne gave us of seeing her little cottage, for I knew that at certain times she would not be occupying her room at the academy. Also, I was glad for you to see that there were many people living in the valley where Daphne's cottage is, for I want you to meet and talk to some of those people. Your story and the efforts you are making to live a life apart from your body whilst still living in the world will not only be interesting to some of them, but it will help them also. Some are not as evolved as you are and have not had, in past lives, the opportunities for progress which you had and which ever led to your being given special tuition in this life. Because you have been privileged to be taught, you too must be willing and anxious to pass on any knowledge that you have to others. Your intention of publishing the gist of my talks with you and your wanderings out of your body as a book is a good thing, but that will only help others who are still living in the world. What I tell you now, and in future talks, is not for your ears alone, but for the ears of anyone who is interested enough to want to understand. When you are told things that have to be kept secret, it is usually because the possession of such knowledge would enable men to do harm to others, if such knowledge were used for selfish purposes. But I can assure you that you are never left in doubt about such matters at the stage in development when that type of knowledge may be given to you. This brings me to the end of your record, covering the second astral journey, and I must congratulate you on the details you were able to bring through. Your determination to remember was the reason for your success, and if you will only realize that willpower is, to a great extent, the open sesame to most of your difficulties, you will continue to have success in the future. The only important detail that you did not seem to remember, and which you probably did not realize at the time, was that during the ceremony in the open glade, there were several hundred members of the Deva kingdom floating gently, more or less hovering immediately above the open clearing and perhaps some 15 to 20 feet above the tops of the trees surrounding the glade. They were not merely spectators or a congregation, such as we see in a big church in the world, but they were most certainly active participants in the ceremony through whose efforts, mainly, the necessary force, of which I have spoken, was generated. It would have been interesting if you had seen them, for you would have noticed that at the end of the invocation made by the bearded priest, they seemed to gather up the force for good that had been generated and immediately afterwards moved off in a compact body, presumably to ensure its achieving the desired results. Do not let this lapse on your part worry you in the least, for I can assure you that you have done very well indeed. Apostrophe The urge you felt to try things out for yourself, the following night, was quite a natural one, and whenever similar urges impress you in the future, always act upon them immediately. The urge comes from the ego, which is you, and the ego is only too willing for you to progress in knowledge of this kind. Activities on higher levels than the physical are much more interesting to an ego than the artificial amusements and the normal routine activities that we have to go through in the physical world. The ego, of course, realizes that our physical plane lives are necessary for his progress in evolution, but the goal of this ambition is always the same, for man to emancipate himself and to learn as quickly as possible the lessons that our countless lives are meant to teach us. By doing so, he will all the sooner be free from the necessity of being reborn again, and be able to take up a different and much more interesting existence, such as is only possible for someone who has learned all the lessons that have to be learned through the medium of physical existence. You can see for yourself how much easier it is for me to explain things now, as you have a fairly good idea of the life that people live on the first, second and third spheres of the world next to this. The third sphere, as you have seen, provides most of the schools for training students in the different arts, and very soon I shall show you the fourth sphere, which is really a continuation of the third. The first and second spheres form one stage, the third and fourth the second stage, the fifth and sixth the third stage, and the seventh sphere is the frontier between the astral and the mental worlds. S115. On the fourth sphere we find many musicians and artists, who work alone and do not wish to teach or perhaps have finished teaching for the time being. We find doctors doing research work. A number of new remedies to fight sickness and disease are discovered at the astral level. Many groups of research students get together and exchange ideas, although they do not have any physical guinea pigs to work upon. Their theories are in due time perfected and impregnated upon the minds and brain cells of doctors doing similar work in the physical world. If you were to ask any medical man engaged in research in this world, whether he had at any time awakened in the morning with the germ of an idea, which possibly would take him months to perfect and put into practice, but which eventually became one of the new advances in medical science, he would probably admit that such was the case. There are buildings, both large and small, which seem to be what we would describe as mental hospitals. Although astral life makes it possible for any normal human being to be completely happy, there are still large numbers of people who cry for the moon and want the impossible. They worry, as they worried in life, and a form of mental neurosis is the usual result. The astral body not only includes a counterpart of the human brain, but it also includes within itself a mental vehicle, commonly referred to as the mind. A man can be troubled by his mind after death, remorse for hasty actions and words in his past life, which he now realizes can never be entirely obliterated, cause him a certain amount of suffering, intense or otherwise, according to the sensitivity of the individual. Such cases are often treated by doctors who specialize in mental troubles, with great benefit to both doctor and patient. On the fifth and sixth spheres, you will find still more research workers, such as psychoanalysts and brain, heart and other specialists. It is quite usual for doctors and specialists in different branches of science to live many consecutive lives in which they earn on with the same type of work. You can imagine how invaluable it is to such men to meet their confreres at the astral level, where all knowledge is pooled in the interests of humanity. There are groups of philosophers who wish to help the world in their particular way. They feel that if the trend of thought in the world were changed to more progressive lines than wars and national domination, life would be considerably more comfortable and more desirable. There are mystics who believe that mankind can best be helped by meditation along such lines as the unity of life. There are other deeply religious beings who feel that man can advance only if he is attached to some religious belief or dogma. Such men endeavor to produce a perfect religion by taking points of doctrine from all the great religions of the past and present and blending them into a new philosophy. The devas concern themselves deeply with all this work, as you will see for yourself in due time. On these levels, world economic problems are discussed and worked upon for months and years.